All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testori, writer of Names and Flavor Text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. With me, as always, interrupting me, as always, is the one and only master of weens, Mike Linneman.
I'm here for the snacks. I'm here, Anthony, and we're both back. We're back here to talk some more flavor today. With our guests watching us live, what are we talking about tonight? Other than the taste.
So, and we joke about this a lot, but like there have been so many sets coming out recently that have just like fire amounts of flavor that we feel like we do a Flavor Gems episode literally every episode and or some type of preview episode. So, coming off the heels of our Hour of Devastation Flavor Gems episode, we now have Commander 2017 to talk about. In the spirit of Commander being the casual format that it is, we decided that instead of doing some structured Flavor Gems episode, whatever, we're just going to talk about all the cards that we think are worth talking about from a Vorthos perspective, because they either have great art, an interesting name, cool flavor text, or some other flavorful anecdote.
That sounds pretty easy. I mean, that seems
right.
Seems
not
pretty
too bad.
Simple.
I don't have to explain the five faces. I don't have to listen to Mike yell at me for not rewriting the article,
which you should do. it's established.
Beautiful, flawless plan.
It's established. Okay, so let's start with an easy one. Let's walk in slow, and then we'll speed this thing up a little bit. We only have a handful here, and to keep the episode under 30 minutes, which we always are, we're gonna start with Edgar Markov. And you and I both know, you know, this is Soren's father, basically instigator of adding vampires to Innistrad. Cool. Artwork by Folk and Baga. You know, obviously you get the German guy to make the vampire art. Duh, just makes sense. But no Romanian artists, unfortunately. They'll work on that probably. But, I mean, there's no flavor text here, so Ant has really nothing to go by. Like, you guys, you know his name.
No. The name. The name is my favorite part of this card, easily. Because so often we get all of these legends and they have some kind of crazy epithet or whatever attached to it. And every once in a while we have a character in the lore who doesn't need it. You know, an example, Queen Marchesa was an example. Like, she became queen. That was the most important part of her lore, right? And in this case, like, everyone knows who Edgar Markov is. And
not everybody.
But a good amount of people. This has been a very high-profile card that we've been waiting for. Like, we wanted it in our return to Innistrad. We didn't get it. And, you know, this is like, imagine if this said Count Dracula. Like, that's the level that this name kind of carries. If this would have said something like Edgar Markov, first vampire, or Edgar Markov, vampire sire or something, like, it just wouldn't have had the same just Edgar Markov. Done. Take it to the bank. Like, it's exactly what this card needs. It sets the tone. I mean, you read that name and you're like, oh, this dude doesn't even need an introduction. Like, I should know who this guy is. And then you look at the art and you got six people dressing him and you're like, geez, like, why do I not know who this guy is? Like, it makes you want to look him up on Wikipedia, or on the Magic Wiki, rather. Not the real Wikipedia.
Did you know there's actually a lot of real Edgar Markovs?
Like, in the world?
No, yeah, like there are a lot of people that literally have this name.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, we should just put all their faces, just do a Google. I'm going to put a link to a Google search, Google image search.
Totally.
Just I looked profiles. Like,
I looked it up on Facebook, and I'm like, what is all these weird? Because it's Sorlick shows up right afterwards. So it's like three, and then it looks like, you know, 3A Rap, M-A Map Cobb. Because Map Cobb, Markov, a P makes an R, the B makes a V in Russian. So Edgar Mapkov. But no, it'd be super. How fun would it be to be a Russian kid, and literally this is your name and you're a card?
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, that was your commander. You're like,
that's
who are
your
you?
Commander.
Myself.
Just like, yeah, I'm Mike.
just who are you, Detroit? What? Like, can you imagine that? Like, just be like, who are you, Kenneth Nagel? Is it green? Yeah, you know it is. You know how I do.
Is it a fatty?
Do it live. Like, I can't even imagine how cool that would be for that like tiny intersection of like probably four people that probably play
magic. Oh, and you can get the card in Russian too.
In Russian, that is your Russian name. Like, come on, come on, buddy. How incredible! I'm sure.
I can't imagine there are a lot of Gideons running around.
Not too many. But no, not too many. Or Liliana Vess. Like that could be, but I'm guessing not too many. You know, you can't Google it because everyone just has like fake Liliana Vess names now, right? Like you can't see on who's not. But no, I think it's a phenomenal flavor piece. I mean, the colors are right. The white in the middle is even right, which is fun to think of like a white-aligned vampire. But you're like, oh, okay. They want to live on and maintain this hegemony they have, which is funny.
Well, I think that the white, to me, the white's interesting because like we know that vampires on Innistrad are traditionally red-black, right? But if you know anything about Edgar Markov's story and the reason why he, you know, ultimately became a vampire in the first place was driven from a very selfish reason, but that selfish reason had to do with his like lineage, right?
Sure.
So it's a very white black approach to a problem, and it's just interesting to see that, and also, you know, the bleed into Soren, who is also white black, so, you know, maybe he learned a thing or two from his grandpa. I don't know.
Maybe, probably not though. Okay. Dig it. I think it's great. And I would love to see a one-liner flavor text here because we don't know what he sounds like or who he is, really.
Right.
I mean, really, you don't know much about him other than he seems incredibly arrogant, but that just makes sense because he's a vampire. They're all that way, right? It's like they're all from, like, New York. Like, they're all that person.
Sure.
After hanging out with Magrini all weekend, I'm just like, oh, man, you're so from New York. I love you, but cripes, dude. Okay, and this is what only the first vampire that we're covering today. We're gonna be covering another one, but we'll get to that in a minute. Ant, what else you got for Edgar here?
That's all I have for Edgar.
All right, well let's head.
Because I mean, I only had the name to work with, other than the fact that he's a knight, which I found interesting. Because if anything, like you said, we don't know a lot about him, but the fact that he's a vampire knight makes me think, you know, maybe this is a little bit about not so much his past, but where he's going. Because, like, we don't know what time period this image is from, right? We don't know if it's from Innistrad.
We'd assume sometime in the past, though that's impossible to know.
That's the assumption, but that's only based off of, like, the other cards that he's featured in this set, right?
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know, I don't know. Like, we saw this vampire knight thing a lot in, you know, Shadows Over Innistrad, so
I can dig it. Moving on, next card, what do you got up, man?
So I think this next one is yours, right? You have Vindictive Lich.
I love this card.
I really like the flavor text and how it plays into the three different bulleted options that you have mechanically. Like, it plays up that narrative of saying heart, mind, soul, weapons, all. And it ties into the fact that you can sack a creature, which is the heart, discard two cards in the mind, or lose some life or your soul. And I thought that was a really nice one-liner to squeeze in here.
I dig that. I just like liches in Magic. It's like the quintessential Dungeons & Dragons character that the first iteration of it in Magic was just terrible. Like, the card was just bad. Just
lich.
Yeah, just it's just lich. Bad. It's just bad. Like, and it's like the most powerful, one of the most powerful undead things that, you know, you aspire to attack. Like, kill the red dragon, kill the lich. Like, you need to be at such high level, you know, it drains levels, which is always a terrifying thing in D&D. And the first lich we see, we're like, oh, well, okay. So they never really were that strong. It didn't, and they didn't make sense flavorfully how they're very strong, but there, once you hit them, you can hit them really hard. You just need to get close to them. And here, you know, you really get to see that. You know, it's very powerful in the different options, and it has the strong power and weak toughness. Like, that in and of itself is fantastic. And this could be reprinted and put in a variety of things. Like, this could be in any set. Literally any set could have this. that has some sort of undead with undead wizard, like undead wizard lich. Like that's what it is.
Right.
So I
have
love.
Have we ever had a like a really powerful legendary lich done correctly? I know we had Gralnu.
No.
But
well,
I don't think we've ever had like a legend that was a lich that really captured the narrative of a lich.
Well, no, I mean, and it's defined differently because it's a zombie wizard, right?
Right.
Like that's how they define a lich. And the closest we had that was Boris Devilboon, your boy, you know, 5-drop 2-2 and puts a minor demon into play. Like, really going to get there. True. Just, but I mean, there was that the Havengol lich that, you know, Dark Ascension, which is strong, and Death Baron, super strong. Both not legendary.
Right, but Havengol is not legendary, yeah.
Nekusar. Nekusar is really, really good.
Nekusar.
Yeah, the
binders. Forget about him.
Yeah, the draw thing. Whenever an opponent make them draw 7 cards.
See, I never remember him because he hits the board and then the game ends.
Basically, yeah.
Usually. Yeah, like, he's there for 2 seconds.
He's usually there. Somebody casts a Windfall and the game just ends.
Right.
Like, right away, like, they'll drop that, and they'll have a couple of their draw engines out, and then people draw 14, and it's like, lose 14 life, game.
It reminds me of this Zagonia comic. Oh, my God, I'm going to date myself now, but it was in a Dragon magazine, right? And it was like, two guys, like, a rogue and a dwarf warrior, and they're outside of the Lich's tomb. And the dwarf's like, I don't want to go in there, and the guy's like, don't worry about it, man. Lich's tombs are usually, like, 14 levels deep. We suck now, but by the time we get to the bottom, we'll be so equipped to fight undead and so much more powerful than we are now, the lich will be a cakewalk. And the dwarf's like, all right, let's do it. And they open, you know, the tomb, and the lich is right there. And he's like, what? Like, he just kills him, like, right away. And I think of that every time, like, I play against a Nekusar deck because you never see him. Like, you're never facing the lich, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, the end boss is here. Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah.
It's like a game of Dark Souls or something. You're just like, what do I do here?
They open the door, they like touch you and like drain you of life, and then you just lose.
Like, game over. Like, oh, this isn't a 14 level tomb. It's just one room.
That's a good point. That's just a really overpowered commander. You're absolutely right. Yeah, they might have ratcheted too hard.
Just a little bit.
Little bit. I still dig it though. I mean, I still think this card is just fantastic. It's not legendary though, and that's the thing. Is liches, by their nature, are so, so rare because they had to have immense power to become one that, you know, it'd be great if each time they called it something a lich that it would be legendary, but, you know, magical Christmas land. We love living there. All right,
We're just both lich fanboys, apparently.
Well, who is it? It's a D&D base, man. It's the D&D base that you want it to have, and you look through and you're like, oh, there really aren't that many of them, even though some of them could be really cool, like the Lich Lord of Unks, which you'd think there'd only be one of, thus legendary, but whatever. Alara Reborn was weird. Just a weird set. Like, Lich Lord of
collection
Unks.
Of Unk liches.
Like, was there a lot of them in Unks? Apparently there's a lot of Unks lords that were all liches. But apparently, you know, in Grixis, there must have been a few. Anyway, moving on from liches. This next card, I don't get it.
Wasitora?
I don't get it.
Oh, come on. I love this card. I love these are the kind of callbacks that I really, really like. Like, this is going all the way back to the Monsters of Magic anthology.
Jeez.
Written by my boy J. Robert King.
How old are you?
Oh, come,
like,
dude,
a thousand.
It's the first. First story. Who is Queen?
You're like 1,000 years older.
Oh, it's so good.
Do you know how many?
So good.
Do you know how many times Wasitora is mentioned in flavor text? Zero.
Exactly.
Zero times.
Dude, okay. Listen, if you're working on Commander, right? You're at WotC. You're working on a Commander set. Everyone knows that this is one of the few areas where we can do this kind of stuff. Like, really awesome callbacks to old
lore. Or Corset.
Corset hasn't existed for a little while, right?
Okay, it's coming back.
So this has kind of been our playground. And it's one thing to be like, hey, what's a lore character who's referenced a bunch of times in flavor text but doesn't have a card? Let's give him a card. Yeah, sure, fun. That's easy.
There's still a lot of them.
What's more difficult is saying, who's a character that only a diehard would really understand and be psyched about seeing, but would also be really exciting to our existing fan base who would know nothing. So you take a character who me, who I mean, I have this book in front of me. I'm looking at it right now. It's actually my favorite short story in the anthology. I was so hyped to see Wasatora, right? But then you have other people on Tumblr who really like cats, and they're like, whoa, this is a cat dragon.
Obviously. I mean, this is just, this is directly saying.
Best of both worlds. Well, I mean, it's this, not even best of both worlds. This to me was world. A gem. Whoever found this is like, yeah, this is a good idea.
Are you calling Ethan knew about this?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it was.
This feels like an Ethan thing.
This is an Ethan move.
I feel like
if I had to, if I was a betting man, I would. That's who I would bet on.
Well, it's hard to say because I do know that they keep running track of some people that need to get made.
Right.
Like Ludovic, great example, which we won't get into that, but. Of things that need to get rebuilt from the past, Felden, you know, it'd be really great. But you need to have champions that do that. And for people that are new to this, Ethan Fleischer is the person that is that person. You know, like the going through old flavor things and being like, why isn't this a card? This could be a card. Let's make this a card. You know, and tries to find some sort of way to sneak that thing in. And I get the fan service of wanting to have that Lisa Frank, Tumblr, super excited, like, cat dog, cat dragon, whatever. I get that. Like, I understand that market research is nice. I don't understand why a Jund cat dragon makes a 3/3 cat dragon, but you'll have to walk me through that.
Because she's... Okay, so you have to have read the story, right? But the short story was all about this mating ritual of the Nokoru and how they're extremely solitary creatures, right? And they show up on this plateau and they basically fight each other for this like dominance right to be able to carry on their breed of cat dragons. And only the like strongest and most fit to survive were allowed the right to breed and to like continue on their line or whatever
of cat dragons.
Correct.
Okay. I have this book and I've never read it.
Dude, oh, it's like the first 10 pages.
There's no art in it.
There's art on the cover.
Like if they had like cat dragon art in it, dude, I'd be all on board. But I was like,
here. What do you mean, Cynthia Shepherd? Beautiful art right here. I mean, you can look at this and read the first 20 pages.
Well, now, yeah, now I'm going to.
Yeah, so in between, you don't have an excuse. Oh, you know, it would be really money, dude, if you went through like the old books and PDF'd them and then put like the art, the magic art that corresponded to the stories, like in the pages. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be good. I'd be all about that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet.
Set that up for some archival student that gets a grant to do it, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I don't know where Madara is for someone new to this game. First of all, they're like, okay, who's Wasatora? Two, what is Nokoru? What is that? Is that Kamigawa? Third thing, what's Madara? Where's that? You know, like, all of this information about this card, you have no idea where this creature is.
Right, but see, but that, to me, that's the essence of Magic. Like, Magic is a game about exploration. So you look at this card, you know nothing. It's got a cool name, but you're like, oh, I don't know what any of that. I know what a queen is, but beyond that, I have no idea. The thing makes little versions of itself, but I mean, any creature can do that, so like, whatever. But you see cat dragon, and it's a legendary cat dragon, and that's intriguing, right? That alone is interesting to you, and you're like, well, what is a Naroku? I want to know. What? Where is Madara? Why is she one of Madara's greatest predators? Like, these are the little subtle hints and nods and whatnot that, like, get that 13-year-old boy, girl, whoever, to want to learn more, want to get more invested in the lore. It's not super blunt. It doesn't just come out and say, like, Wasatora, she was this and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like reading a textbook because nobody at 13 wants to read a textbook. Right? They just want to feel like they found something that they weren't supposed to find, and it makes them want to keep looking.
I'm getting better at, like, leaving the clues to get Hansel and Gretel out of the forest for Ant. Like, you know, I just, like, leave them, like, the candy pieces.
You know how to poke the bear.
And Ant is like, I'm going to follow this out all the way up to freedom. And really, I'm just leading you straight to the witch. Like, every time. Every time. comically enough, while we're on the topic of Ethan, this next piece, it's not even a card. It's a token, which is technically they're not real, but they're part of the game phase zone, which is weird now with phasing that they stay. The rule change. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I heard about it.
Yeah, it changes everything, right? Like all those old timey like phasing strategies don't work anymore.
Right.
Just super bizarre.
It's
which
weird.
Which means that like you could like ooh phasing. I could use phasing again now that people everybody knows what it is. So you're not the weirdo at the commander game doing like this.
Trying
is
to explain it, and they're like, "That's not how it works."
Or I'm gonna band as a team, and they're just like, "Okay, you dinosaur."
Yeah, whatever. I Nekusar, you lose.
Yeah, totally. Like Sol Ring and a Nekusar, and you're like, ugh, really?
So I'm gonna take a page out of your book on this next one. I don't get it. Why is this important? No, like, who cares?
Come on,
just a token.
No, you can't even say that. You can't even do that. Like it's different because I mean this is like your jam. But the creation of a token, it gives you information even for you. Because you can use it in different ways.
I don't know. It's a cat that's good at hanging out in the forest.
A lot
of cats do that.
You're not even trying here. You're on autopilot. Like, you're hitting all C's on your ACT and hoping to get the 13 or whatever the average is. So Jedit, obviously, was reprinted. Old-timey legend that's been around forever. And since at that time when they printed Jedit, they didn't have tokens. Didn't have tokens at all. And even the second time they printed Jedit, no tokens. So obviously Jedit came out in Legends, which was 90 foe. Planar Chaos made tokens. You don't get any. They made Jedit's Dragoons, which didn't work. So what people did is this 2/2 Green Cat Warrior token with Forest Walk, they would take the Chronicles version, literally, of Cat Warrior, and put that into play. Cat Warriors, which is literally what the token is, but it has a mana cost, so it wasn't technically a token. Like, you couldn't technically use it in competitive play because it doesn't work. You could use the 6th edition too, but white borders are just ugly. Just don't do that. My God. Despite, like, having mats, I tend to like white frame, like, white mats, but on, like, cards, like, I refuse to use white, even though it's matting. It's the odd change.
It's hideous. That's why.
Well, because it gets dirty. It gets dirty and looks terrible. So the Cat Ward, it never got made into a token, and there really hasn't been any other times where you need a 2/2 Cat Warrior with Forest Walk. Like, incredibly niche thing. We're not talking about a 1/1 Snake with Death Touch Ophiomancer that hasn't been made yet, which is shocking that it hasn't. This is an older card, and Commander products, as Ant said, are one of the few areas where you can take a token and get it finally made. All of these two tokens already exist online, so Magic Online obviously has to code it in, so everything that makes a token has a token artwork. Every single one. Like, had to be made. Like, the pincer, the spawn token, the gnome token, like, they have everything already made. They're all basically waiting for a reprinted physical card, and then you don't have to spend any budget on the artwork because it's already done. You can just reprint it. Now, granted, not all the artwork is stellar, I would say, simply because it was made a bajillion years ago in many cases. So it's like, it's good enough. It's fine. But this one, it's actually pretty decent. This is Michael Sutphin. He's a pretty darn good artist. He paints tiny, like super, super, super tiny. All of his paintings were like 5x7s, real small.
Really? Oh,
yeah, I didn't know that. Like every single one of his. So like all of his like really, really cool ones from like the Urza's block. Everyone assumes they paint really big, like Yawgmoth's Bargain. You're like, man, it's really highly detailed. It's 5x7. It's tiny. Unbelievably small. So he had...
Why would you do that to yourself?
I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. Lars Grant West paints like 4 feet by 4 feet, and everyone else wants to like have a sore back. I don't know. So I talked to Ethan about this, and I asked him, I'm like, come on, buddy. I know I bust your chops like every other day about Ophiomancer not having a snake token. Like, you know, we make fun of you about this constantly. And I'm like, this cat warrior, I know you did this. And he's like, no, you don't know. You don't know anything. You don't work here. Not like there's a mole. No. And I'm like, come on. I know you got this cat warrior reprinted to get the token out there. I know you did. And he's like, well, yeah, maybe during a playtest session, I said, well, if we're going to print it, we need tokens. and then, you know, these things go into committee and they get debated around in development, whether the card should be stated or not. But obviously he was a driving force in that. And it's a huge thing to have those things printed for Commander plays. So you finally have an official token, which I don't really use official tokens much anymore. I use community-based people. Because just like the same as choosing basic lands, turns out you collect original licensed tokens or the original OGs first until you have to like make an update. Like you make an update to your deck and you're like, oh, I need a 2/2 zombie token. And you go through all your official ones, and then you go through all the random community ones that, you know, someone maybe gave to you or, you know, you got when you got the thing from Card Kingdom or whatever, and you notice that you have such a variety, it gives you higher customizability to a deck. And as soon as they make physical tokens, then a community member will make something on a riff of it, of some variety. So it triggers that response. So not only do you get, you know, a physical to use for Jedit here, you actually get that plus the response from the community where they make their own. So it really has this compounding effect to a pretty huge degree, and he gets that. And obviously the best instances are when one new reprinted token hits like two or three or five cards, you know, like one elemental that's red, like works in a bunch of different areas, or like a 1/1 red soldier instead of, you know, white. Like those are like the fantastic things. And the weird, like the wave token or the kelp token or the Camarid token, which, you know, obviously Andrew's always wanting. But no, I want to see more of these things, and I'm going to try to write an article on one of these, like, of which ones are left. I wrote an article about this, like, 2 years ago, and there was a lot. And since then, they've printed a bunch of them. They're actively, like, slowly chipping away, like the Thrall token. Never got made.
I'm sorry. So are you saying that there's an article that you wrote that needs to be updated because it's out of date?
Okay. This is what we're going to do right now.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
interesting.
Oh, well.
So, Mike, when are you going to write that article?
When are you going to get to do that? I don't know. Probably soon.
What was that article called?
It's like the Missing Tokens of Magic, I think. It's
a terrible name. It's like terrible.
It's like the most obvious name ever, Ant. It's actually tells what the article
you
is about.
You should have named it Tokens 2009.
Just... Oh boy, that's fantastic. Anyway, next card, Ant. I chose the next one too, didn't I?
Yeah, this one's all you. This next one, Color
okay.
Mind Eater.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's just straight up art. You know, the name is exactly what it is. It's a Garu Mind Eater.
So
like, we know exactly what these are, but
I got a question. So we posted the art below. Talked to Igor, our boy, and said, hook us up. Get us some art. And I post this for one reason, Ant. Ant, I don't know anime.
Okay.
Never have. Never really, like, you know,
never
I...
Never got into it?
Well, I didn't have a comic shop, right? Like, in my rural hometown, the closest place to make magic was 45 minutes away. So literally, I couldn't play until I was 16. And then F&M, in the fall, I played football. And in the winter, basketball games on Friday. And in springtime, track, I was usually recovering on a Friday night, you know, because track meets are on Thursdays.
Right.
Or on Saturdays. So I was just tired. So I never got to do that F&M as a teenager. So for me, that anime learning was like after a meet or after a game. And they'd have like...
like Adult Swim at 2 a.m. type stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'd watch,
that was me. That was exactly what my anime was.
Watch Dragon Ball 1:30 in the morning. Like whatever those things would be. But the idea of the Japanese horror with the wet hair, you know, riffing on The Ring is, you know, the closest comparable in America now. This vampire is straight up copied from something, and I don't know what.
Really?
It looks like something I've seen in reference, but I can't place where.
This image to me screams. Talk about, we were talking about Dark Souls earlier. Like, I feel like I've killed this thing in like Blight Town 10 years ago. Not really 10 years ago. Dark Souls isn't that old.
No, it's not that old. No.
But still, like, just this image of this, like you said, like this wet, creepy creature just like clawing its way out of the swamp and like upstairs. Like, first of all, who builds stairs into a swamp?
Awesome.
Like, it just feels very Dark Souls to me in its like composition in a good way. Like, it's very, very creepy.
It's meant to be.
But I don't know. I don't know about it, like, being from an anime. It doesn't remind me of
it. Because it's stylized. Obviously, it's drawn by a magic artist, so it fits in that world. But the elongated hands, the elongated fingers, the thin shoulders that looks humanoid, but then you see, you know, weird horns coming out of the side of the face. Like, it feels as though it's in an IP, or it's based on another IP. Whereas the other Karu vampires, I didn't get that feel. I didn't get that feel, especially the one like sitting up on like the ridge or whatever. Karu Bloodsucker, like, I didn't get it there. And I think it's because of the face. The face didn't fit the same as this face. Like, it looks like a totally different vampire.
Well, these vampires, right, their lore is that they steal the faces of the people that they drain, and they, like, stretch them over their horns,
just
right?
So
like
weird.
Face horns, which is really freaky.
Super strange. It's super bizarre. But, well, like, when you first look at it, you're like, oh, it kind of has, like, a stone face. Not, oh, there's a face under this. Like, you can't see the hair in the original Karu Bloodsucker, like, unless you stare at the image for a while, because you can't see the shoulders. Whereas this, you totally can, because there's less hair. I'm telling you, like, this is from an anime. I don't know which one. It's based on some of it.
Man, I have no idea.
It's the hand. The hand is going to drive me bananas. I'm going to Google it. Some listener is going to be like, oh, yeah, this is this one graphic novel. You should check it out. I'll send you a PDF. Speaking of PDFs, it's going to come. I know it is. Like, I want to put this in my art review and talk about it for a while, but I'm like, I don't get how I know this. And this is the problem with concussions. You be careful for your kids playing football. Like, it just doesn't connect. Like, I know I've seen things, and I know general references for them, but I'm like, I can't find the exact words to find the link. And it's always exciting for me to write an art review, because then I find the exact thing. I'm like, oh, yes, that's the right thing. Yes. I get super excited about it. And nobody notices those things. It's usually when I put a link to something, that's the super pumped things for me, when people go back and they dig deeper to see, like, what was he talking about in that? And they start clicking on the links, and they're like, oh, my God, there's so much more article here. And that's also why it takes me so much longer to write it, instead of posting all the artworks, one-liner. Neat tongue on this one. I mean, it's mindless. You don't. It's a one-time read instead of like a reference citation that years from now people can go back and say, "Oh, this is what was happening at the time. This is what it was referenced to pop culture then. This is what it talked about at magic at the time, perfectly." So that, you know, if I get hit by a bus, someone could really dig in and find these things. Magic Man Sam, I swear, just steals half of those things, which good for him. Happy someone does. But that's all I got on this one. Yeah. All
right.
You're running home for all the next last ones.
Yeah. So my next one is Bloodforged Battle Axe. I picked this one mostly just I really like the flavor driven narrative of this card. Like, I like the idea that it's literally an axe forged out of blood, and the way that you make more is you draw more blood. Like, it's such a simple idea, but it's executed, I think, very well.
Did you see the artwork?
Oh yeah, well, of course.
No. Did you look close? Do you see the axe on the ground in negative space?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like that's the first thing. It's Oh, that's cute. I see what
it's interesting, doing. Right? Like it's I really like that idea.
Just like just using negative space to show a copy, which people were asking, like, why doesn't this have a token? And I'm like, no, you don't have tokens.
It's right there.
Yeah, it's literally in the artwork. And they're like, what? Yeah. And I'm like, no, it's a look for the white space. And they're like, oh. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good art description. Does they like, oh, make it in the blood? Man, make a couple sketches, figure it out. Like that'd be a fun thing to do because then they get to play with angles and artists get to show different areas to see like how do you show.
Right.
Like you picking up one from the ground that didn't exist.
This could have very easily been something like a dude holding an axe and then like with an outstretched hand forming another axe
right.
out of blood.
Sure.
And
easily.
You know, to connotate like the copy or whatever, but this so much more clearly emphasizes like, yeah, there's a puddle of blood on the ground and I have an axe and now I've made another
right.
axe.
You're right. Otherwise you get to see a person and you see two weapons. Like do you
and
crop
you get distracted?
Correct. Do you right. do you crop out their head so they know it's not a creature? Like how
right.
do they put them in three quarter? I totally get that. So well done representation for that. And I like the little skulls on the axe. That's fun.
All right, this next one's all you.
Why?
You
Why?
Have. Well, because.
How do you not like this one?
What?
How do you not like this one?
Oh, I very much do, but I like it because of the art, is what I'm saying.
Oh. You don't like the story behind it?
That's okay.
Really?
I don't hate it.
Really?
When you say story, you mean like the mechanic?
No, this has. Okay, so. Sure. How does the mechanic impact the art?
How does it impact the art?
Yes.
I don't know. See, that's my disconnect. Like, I don't know. I'm not following
okay.
this.
Did you?
This,
were
this
you
to
even
me,
part
okay,
of
so
Alara?
Just to be clear, this to me would be a card that I would look to your art review to understand what I'm missing. Because I don't see how the art ties to the mechanic.
Really?
So okay. that's why I'm like
okay,
very
okay.
excited
you're,
to hear
you're,
you
you're
talk
you're
about
excited
this.
To hear me. Okay. So first thing, Cass is a human on Grixis. Okay.
Right. That
first
I
thing.
Understand
first
from
thing.
The background and how it's like made out of teeth and eyes.
Sure,
and
sure. She's yeah. on Grixis and she's not a skeleton. That is incredibly unusual. Incredibly unusual. Most humans don't last very long, for obvious reasons. Horrible plane to live on, or part of a plane to live on. So I mean, obviously, most of them get smoked pretty quickly. She's older. She's not a young, like necromancer, sexy necromancer or something. Like she's an right. older maiden. She's been around a while, and she's legendary. She's not just a random person there. She's got a name, and she mentioned how loss has no meaning. You cannot take from those who have nothing. Mind you, because of the Vis, you know, there is no new life on Grixis. Now, obviously, this is probably pre-Conflux where they smashed them all together. So there's no new life. No new life is possible on Grixis because of the color pie. You know, it's blue, it's black, and it's red. Green is the color of life, of recreation. Here, it's reanimation. And Viz is the kind of like the life force of that. It's like this magical essence, which is basically the stuff floating around her. So she uses some sort of magic to keep her alive. Basically skin from falling off, whatever. So she's probably crazy old. Like crazy old, I would assume. Especially that she's not skeletonized in any way, shape, or form. Or if she has been, she, you know, covered it up. She's also floating, which is cool. So there's that. She has some sort of artifact with her because she's wearing some of those things. Obviously, she's a 3/4 wizard. Humans are normally 1/1, sometimes 2/2, 3/3 if you're lucky. 3/4 is crazy strong. Crazy strong compared to like some of the strongest humans like Rafik. Like, think about that. Like, think about the strength of a wizard, which is usually like 0/1, 1/1. Rafik is a 3/3. Like,
right.
Rafik fighting by himself, you know, if he's exalted, his things trigger, he's a 4/4, and then he gets double strike, he can hit for 8/4. And he's, like, the strongest dude ever. But even then, he's still only 3/3. Still gets killed by a lightning bolt. This does not. So obviously, this Grixis has mastered that part of it. But even that isn't the coolest part. coolest part about this is you need to know another card that was based in Grixis. And that card is Infectious Horror. Okay. Infectious Horror by Pete Venders, your boy. The flavor text and not once in the history of Grixis has anyone died of old age.
Interesting.
No one has ever died of old age because you never wear out because you usually get skeletonized or you become a zombie or something of that sort. So, like, old age doesn't exist. And she...
Wait. So, okay. Hold on. You might have just blown my mind right now because I've been trying to figure out why she would be referred to as a dissident mage.
Okay.
Because dissident is someone who opposes the official policy.
Heyo.
So are you saying that because she's old, she's somehow opposing
Heyo.
The official policy of Grixis that no one lives long on Grixis and she is living long?
How fun is that?
Dude.
How crazy is that?
This might now be my new favorite.
How crazy is that?
That's really good.
Like, straight up, I looked up, like, okay, Grixis, just to see if anything talked about, like, Grixis is the home of blah, blah, blah. You know, like, probably some cheesy flavor text that you wrote back in the day, or, like, whatever, or someone wrote. And I was like, okay, what can I find about this? Because right away, I'm like, anytime they depict an older woman, there's reasons. Like, Magic doesn't do that unintentionally. They're very meticulous about doing that because they don't want to F it up. So I looked, okay, when were they talking about this? You know, Fleshbag Marauder, great example. Grixis is a world where only things found in abundance are death and decay.
Right.
Okay. Corpses, whole or in part, are the standard currency among necromancers and demons. She is neither dead nor decaying. So her ability, she can do an instant and sorcery from your graveyard. You know, she gets to use it basically one time, but she has, through her time, found ways to reuse a spell. Because you obviously cast one spell and then your graveyard gets cast one more time. So she's found a way to have a flashback effect for everything, including long life. Wow. Fighting against Grixis's very nature, which is just
that's
like...
That's crazy.
That's incredible. That is incredibly deep to think about what does the plane represent. Okay, how can we make a legend that's like, nah, I'm doing my own thing. That isn't a planeswalker.
Right.
A plus. Utterly A plus.
Yeah, that's insane. That's so good.
Yeah, where you're like, oh, that's a cool thing. It's a recurring thing. Really, really strong.
I totally didn't get it. I was like, I don't. I'm like, what is this? Like, I just don't under. I just assumed that I was missing something in the art.
Well, we are, but art is what informs the character. Like, without the art, you're like, this is.
But I didn't think that far into it. I didn't think like that. The hint was just simply, no, dummy, it's Grixis. Like, that's the hint.
Yeah.
You know,
she's supposed to be dead. She's supposed to be withered. She's supposed to be a lich. Lich
That's
Lord of
crazy.
Unks, your boys.
Yeah, my boys, the Unks.
And she's not any of those. And, you know, the dissident is the tip off for you. But for me, it's old woman on Grixis. Well, that's weird.
Yeah, that's cool.
Super good. Like, honestly, and the card is so strong. Like 3/4 in commander.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. It's really good. It's really good.
It dodges so many things. This is, I've heard even heard like the speculator MTG Finance or MTG Finance if you do your spell check incorrectly, which makes me laugh.
Aunts and unks.
Yeah. says this is probably going to be one of the really valuable cards in like 5 years because it's so.
Oh really? The black blue red commander deck is going to be the good one to buy.
Weird. Weird. Well,
so bizarre.
So bizarre. Well, especially this card because it's so hard to reprint. This card is so hard to reprint.
Yeah, I know, right? Barring like another commander product or something like that, yeah.
Or like an anthology.
Like supplemental only unless we go to Alara and she's got some kind of story or something.
Or something of that sort to be maintained around. So, right. utter home run on this one. And it I was going to go over this a lot in the art review, but I'm like, we have to talk this out because it's just so good. It's so good. This is the perfect thing where Ant gets his flavor of names, where he gets the here. You know, flavor text and name perfectly aligned into it. I get the art fits in, and then there's a flavorful gamer mechanic of flavor to do it again. Like, this hits everything that Ant has been talking about for years in his comically named article, but it's the one that really stands out amongst the bunch.
Yeah.
All right, Ant, agreed. We got two to go. What do you want next?
All right, I got Kindred Dominance. This one, just I wanted to talk about the name itself. Just
why?
It's perfect.
Why?
For exactly what this card does. So choosing a creature type, destroying all creatures that aren't of the chosen type. So you're literally just picking, okay, you and your brothers and sisters, you're going to dominate. Everyone else is toast.
Okay.
And it just spells it out, and sometimes that's okay. Sometimes it's exactly what a card needs, and especially when it's a card that has a simple, straightforward two-line mechanic. This didn't need some kind of weird name that I have to think about for like days on end. It needed something simple, and this 100% delivers.
Okay, so this is a cycle, you know.
Yeah, I know, but this is the best one.
You think this is the best one of them?
I think this is the best named of the five.
Okay, because I would agree it is the best name. That said,
like, in my mind, someone named this Kindred Dominance and then they're like, oh, I'm gonna try to name all the other ones Dominance. Like, because I've done that. I've totally, like, I've been working the file, I've come up with a really good name, and then I notice afterwards, I'm like, oh, this is a cycle, but I really like this name, how do I make it work? And it works. Like, the other names definitely work, but of the bunch, this one is by far the best one.
Did you ever have ones that actually got printed like that or not?
Nah. I did. Yeah, I had the monuments in Amonkhet.
Oh, yes.
But that
yes.
one was easy.
Yeah, cheating. Well, it is super cheating. I can dig it. I like the art on this, too. The balance left to right where X cuts through things, you know, it's really, really, really great way to show, like, demon, demon, demon. Like, how do you show three demons? Like, where do their wings go? Oh, let's balance it left to right.
Yeah, like low, medium, high.
Exactly. Like, right. That's exactly how we're going to do it. Push it back into space, make it symmetrical, right. Done. And fantastic work for that. Okay, dig it. One to go. One to
go. All right, so my last one is Disrupt Decorum. So... as a red player, first of all, I love the simplicity of this card. Just like, go to all creatures you don't control. Like, how red can you possibly get, right? When you do that, it's going to cause absolute mayhem at the table. Because remember, Commander is the kitchen table format of choice, right?
True.
So you're literally causing chaos at the dinner table. So what are we going to make the art? How about chaos at dinner, right? Disrupt Decorum, you have a bunch of like fancy dressed people all gouging each other's eyes out. It's basically Thanksgiving at the Tessitore's.
It's
right,
the comment section,
and it says dinner and politics don't mix, which is a beautiful one-liner to cap this card off. I know what you want to call it in the comment section.
It's the comment section. It's but literally the
to
comment
me
section.
This is the red dinner. Like, it looks and is reminiscent of the Red Wedding from Game of Thrones. It's a little more chaotic, which is more fitting to red magic in general.
Sure.
It's on a red card. It's showing dinner. I don't know how you could call it anything else but the Red Dinner.
It's probably going to be known as, like, Red Dinner going forward.
It's Red Dinner. I mean, that's... I guarantee this thing's playtest name was probably Red Dinner. Like,
we should ask Sid about it, the artist, and be like, hey, Sid, was this called the Red Dinner?
What was the playtest name?
What was the playtest name?
Red Dinner.
Sometimes the artists do. Because
now
do
I want
to
know, like, what are the other ones? Is there, like, you know, Green Breakfast, like Black Brunch? Like, what would those cards? That's the cycle we need, but that we don't deserve.
I don't know what color would be most up for brunch, though. Like, brunches are fancy and boozy. They're very bougie.
Of course, Black Brunch.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Black Brunch. Yeah, that
dude, nobody goes to brunch and doesn't have an agenda. Come on.
Well, you're also from New Jersey, like, so I take that with a grain of salt. Real talk.
Breakfast. All right. So eggs. When you have eggs, so white would probably have breakfast, right?
Boring, dull, same thing all the time.
Breakfast,
sure.
Every day, yeah. Green would be what? Dessert.
No, green would be recycled, man.
Lunch?
Green would all be all like last night's steak in a big old scramble.
Oh, so lunch, yeah, leftovers for lunch.
Yeah, leftover lunch.
All right, so then what's blue then? Dessert.
A creative.
I feel like blue would be like a cocktail.
Probably a creative, obnoxious cocktail that takes like 20 minutes to
like
make.
A potion or something. Oh, yeah,
aperitif.
Right. That some guy like spun. Yeah, an apple tea. a blue martini.
Yeah, I could see that. Someone needs to make that a thing, like the next GP, like have like a Multiple course meal.
I just feel like this needs to be like the next cycle that we get like one card a year over the next 5 years.
I like those. I really do.
I love them. Yeah.
I love the long cycles.
Yeah. So there we go. We got the meals. The meals cycle. We have dinner. We need breakfast, lunch, brunch, and a nightcap.
Like, is there going to be 11sies? No?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. Which is basically just brunch anyway.
Yeah.
It could be
a colorless one that's dessert, because everyone likes
it. Yeah, everybody loves dessert, sure. Make it simple. Ice cream, it's always dessert.
It's like an ice cream cone.
I'm sure it's in the onset. Wouldn't be surprised.
Ice cream cone.
That's all I got for these. And I think the set is really, really well done. I think it's really found its stride with a new team. Mind you, the creative team has largely turned over pretty recently. And this was kind of like the last hurrah for the last team, because obviously commander sets are done on an annual basis. So, you know, this is when, you know, they've been in there for a couple of years, and really, even the art directors really found their stride after Jeremy Jarvis. And you can see, and it shows. It really does show, like, art description of Kess, like, that concept is so high level.
Right.
Disrupt Decorum, like, that idea, do you think that's been sitting a while? Maybe. If not, it should have been. Like, it's such a clean idea. And then you have, like, the really, really technical, you know, Vindictive Lich, where you're like, all right, well, let's hit everybody with different things, because it represents all the different parts of a lich. Like, what, like, that's stuff you'd expect to see, like, once a year, but not in so many different heady places.
Right.
So, I mean, out of all the Magic products, I think Commander's probably created the best. It has reprints. It has new artworks and reprints to show flavor of background things, like Barter and Blood, which is like, or, you know, it just has the new cards. It fits the vintage crowd. It fits the casual crowd. Like, everyone is excited about this product, top to bottom, new, old, young player. Yeah. Like, I'm shocked that they're infusing so much flavor in and giving us storyline moments in a supplemental set.
Right.
Utterly incredible to do that, which I did not expect would ever happen. I thought it'd just be a reprint, whatever. But like Barter and Blood, showing the exact moment that Sorin became a vampire, like what the?
Yeah.
What?
Dude, it's crazy. It's crazy to think about how much Vorthoses look forward to supplemental product.
A reprint set. Basically, yeah. A supplemental set with largely reprints. There's only, what, like 56 cards here that are new.
Right.
I mean, how ridiculous that we're pumped about that. But I'm all for it. I love getting the commander. I always pick up a couple cards. It always forces me to do deck building right afterward, tweaking my commander decks. So kudos to Wizards on that. And if they want to do follow-up, yeah, bet you some more. Where can they get a hold of you?
Best place to get a hold of me is on Twitter, at AntTestator, or go to my website, AntTestator.com. Has all my contact info.
Has all the things. And you know what? If someone wants to holler at me and says found some secret details, you know, they rolled a one on their six-sider playing their D&D game, they can find me at Vorthos Mike. My direct messages are always open. Always hit me up with questions if you feel up for it. But other than that, Ant, we got to get back at this soon. I found something new. I found a continuity person from the past. We're going to be trying to get on for an interview soon, which is always the most fun people, because that, you know, the people with the amazing memories, you want those people on board because they get the stories.
That's right.
We'll be back soon here, but thanks for watching today.